O'Hare, 75, Bloomington, 73, 76 at Mattoon, 79 at Carbondale. 70 degrees at South Bend, it was 76 at Lafayette, 78 at Indianapolis, and 77 at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported 76 degrees at the top of the hour, the sky sunny. The dew point, 55, the relative humidity, 48%, the wind out of the north at 12 miles per hour with gusts to 20, the barometric pressure, 30.06 and steady. And at 12:38, 76 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is sunny. Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann announced yesterday she's running for the GOP presidential nomination. She's trying to set herself apart from the crowded field of Republican hopefuls. Some make an appeal to Tea Party budget hawks, others to Christian conservatives. Bachmann wants the support of both. She made her announcement in Waterloo, Iowa. NPR's Don Gagne was there.
Michelle Bachmann came to Waterloo for her first campaign rally because she spent the first 12 years of her life in the city, a fact that allows her to claim Iowa, the first in the nation caucus state, as home turf. At the event, she described what might be called the Bachmann Coalition.
It's made up of peace through strength conservatives, and I am one of those. It is made up of fiscal conservatives, and I am one of those. It is made up of social conservatives, and I am one of those. And it's made up of the Tea Party movement, and I am one of those.
In this election season, there have been frequent reminders of divisions among Republicans, some of whom say the focus needs to be on the economy because that's where President Obama can be beaten, while others insist that social issues need to remain front and center, that the party needs a candidate who will fight abortion and same-sex marriage. But these groups seem to find common ground in Michelle Bachmann. The crowd in Waterloo yesterday numbered a few hundred. 65-year-old Sharon Adams was there wearing a Bachmann campaign button. Her top issue?
Abortion. Abortion. We have to save the lives of our babies.
And Adams says Bachmann has all the right priorities.
She just strikes me as somebody that stands above the crowd. She just is ready and willing to devote her life to getting America back on track.
Zach Beshorner also came out to see Bachmann. He's 37. He owns a real estate company. But if you ask him about abortion and same-sex marriage and social issues, he cuts you off.
Those aren't my issues. Nope. Nope. Actually, I kind of favor same-sex marriage.
Beshorner is a member of the Tea Party. For him, it's all about government spending and the growing financial crisis, he says, the nation is in. He's firmly in Bachmann's camp.
It would be hard to dissuade me. She's exactly what we need, somebody with common sense. And she has it, I can tell.
Campaign events at this point in the contest draw the undecided as well, including lots of people who just want to check the candidate out in person. 39-year-old homemaker and mother of two, Jennifer Green of West Des Moines, made the two-hour drive to get a look at Bachmann. She says she's interested, but that it's early.
And who's to say she's the one? She sounds different. She sounds outside the box. I think this is a pretty significant election. I don't want somebody who's part of the machine. I want somebody who's going to take on the machine.
Also in the crowd was 32-year-old Tyler Vincent. He described himself using three negatives: not a Republican, not a conservative, and not Tea Party. He did say he won't be voting for Michelle Bachmann, but he also said he could see her doing very well.
I've never seen morale lower in the nation, you know. And there are a number of reasons for that. So if she can tap into that and play all those chords right, you know, she could go a long way.
Comments like that, even from people who don't like her politics, show that Bachmann has succeeded at one thing very early in the campaign. She's gotten people's attention, and now she'll try to use it to crack into the top tier of candidates in the Republican race. Don Gagne, NPR News, Waterloo, Iowa.
It's 12:42. A U.S. district judge has blocked two of the more controversial portions of Georgia's new immigration law from taking effect. But the law will continue to require businesses to check the status of new hires. Georgia farmers say that gives them little time to adjust for this summer's harvest. Charles Edwards reports from Atlanta.
$69 billion a year. That's the farm-to-table impact of agriculture in Georgia. But the state's top industry is taking a hit from the new immigration law. That's according to Georgia Agribusiness Council President Brian Toler.
This law has created what we know to be challenges in the workplace for agriculture as well as other industry sectors that have come to rely on workers that are mostly Hispanic.
Toler says the state's new law is frightening away Hispanic workers, leaving thousands of farm jobs vacant. However, a federal judge ruled parts of the Georgia law misinterpret federal law and possibly infringe on civil rights. Toler hopes that convinces some Hispanic workers to stay in Georgia. Governor Deal, a former congressman, says because the federal government has failed to solve the problem with illegal immigrants, Georgia had to act. For NPR News, I'm Charles Edwards in Atlanta.
To the Afternoon Magazine, I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft, our technical director this afternoon. The 2008 recession has taken its toll up and down U.S. Route 150, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture says almost every Illinois county along the 150 corridor has seen an uptick in 2010 in use of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as food stamps. But anti-hunger advocates say many people who have lost their jobs are not taking advantage of SNAP. Illinois Public Media's Dave Dickey reports as part of our series, Life on Route 150.
SNAP is supposed to provide a safety net for those down on their luck. But often those who qualify say no thanks, like Urbana resident David Wagner.
No, I don't see the point, because I want to be able to make it on my own, you know, instead of something given to you by the government.
Anti-hunger advocates say Wagner's response is not uncommon, especially among the elderly and illegal immigrants. But anecdotal information suggests large numbers of newly unemployed are also saying no to SNAP.
We're dealing with people who've never had access benefits in that way before, and that's really overwhelming.
That's Tracy Smith, State Director for Feeding Illinois, the state association of food banks across the state.
And I know even in my own life, I've had some friends who've experienced layoffs and mortgages are underwater and never thought they would be thinking about applying for benefits. And it was definitely a pride thing. I'm not ready. Maybe it's going to have to get worse before I'm willing to do something like that.
The issue of stigma in using food stamps is not a new concept. Before the late 1990s, USDA issued paper coupons monthly to food stamp recipients, and there was no anonymity at food checkout lines. Now recipients receive a debit-style card called the Illinois Link Card. Still, Smith says the issue of shame may be prevalent in rural communities.
You go into a Jewel in Chicago and chances are you're never going to see that person again. But if you go into a mom and pop store in, small town Illinois, then you do have a connection with them.
This past legislative session, Illinois State Representative Chapin Rose introduced a measure to investigate whether Illinois could get a waiver from the federal government to add photo IDs to link cards and how much it would cost to implement.
You know, it's just a matter of common sense. I mean, even Sam's Club, they should put a photo on their cards to get into Sam's Club. You know, why on earth wouldn't you want, you know, to be ensure that the end user of a card is, in fact, the person entitled to use the card? The going rate in Urbana, Illinois is 50 cents on the dollar for a sold link card benefit. And when people are selling these things on the streets for 50 cents on the dollar, it's absolutely wrong.
Cheryl Precious of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank contends SNAP fraud amounts to just 1 cent on the dollar nationwide. Still, Rose's measure, HB 161, cleared the House, taking anti-hunger advocates by surprise. In the Senate, it languished in committee, failing to reach the Senate floor before the session ended. Rose doesn't believe photo IDs on link cards would result in shameful moments in grocery stores. Precious isn't so sure.
Imagine, you know, you're the photo on the link card and your wife takes your link card to do the grocery shopping and the clerk questions her and ultimately, you know, maybe she has to produce a document. Maybe the clerk isn't fully trained, doesn't understand. She walks out of the store with no groceries and all of the people in line behind her gawking. You know, that's an uncomfortable situation for anybody.
Illinois Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park is an outspoken lawmaker when it comes to feeding the hungry. He says it would be a mistake to underestimate shame issues.
It's largely a private problem. There are a lot of folks who are secretly hungry. There's a certain stigma attached to it. And a lot of folks who are hungry never thought that they would be in a position where they were. So we need to break down some of those barriers, and we need to recognize that this is not a partisan problem, this is not a geographic problem, this is not a problem that divides itself on race or gender. Everyone is vulnerable.
Precious and Smith say there should be a crackdown on SNAP fraud, but not at the expense of making sign-up more restrictive. This is Dave Dickey, Illinois Public Media.
To hear stories in our Life on Route 150 series, for more information about the SNAP program and other food programs, visit willconnect.org, willconnect.org.
The countdown to the end of our fiscal year has begun. Our task this last month is to reach our membership goal of $2.1 million. Together, we've worked through significant challenges this year, and together, we can close the gap and reach our fundraising goal by June 30th. Making your gift online is easy at willpledge.org. Our website's available around the clock. Thank you.
Ernie Lopez is serving 60 years for the rape and death of a baby girl. But a new look at the medical evidence supports this caregiver's claim that he is an innocent man.
To have somebody to pass away in your hands, especially a babe, you feel helpless.
An investigative report on the uncertain science behind pediatric deaths. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 28th of June, 2011. It's the birthday of King Henry VIII of England, born Greenwich, 1491. His older brother Arthur was supposed to become king, but Arthur died when Henry was just 11. He was crowned just before his 18th birthday, a well-educated